that is where we've sort of as an introduction, but we want to take a look at the idea of what's in a name. Does anybody here know what their name means? No? The Rose of Sharon. Okay. Yours is beautiful. Dan is beautiful. Okay. Anyone else know their name? Now, there are names, and then there are names, right? You have a name that you write down. Like I was filling out some medical questionnaires. I love filling out medical questionnaires. I don't know about you. I just think they're fabulous. And in order to take the edge off of feeling good, I try to give myself a paper cut when I'm filling them out because it's so much fun. But there's not only your name, but there is your name. And by that I mean your reputation, right? Isn't that a name? Isn't that a name? My name, Chester, means, I know nobody knows this, means a camp in the wilderness. I love the looks. I love the response. I really do. A Chester was a Roman military term. The Roman legion would march out like when they went to take over Europe, and they created a military camp in the wilderness from there to go pillage, right? That was a Chester. Think of all the towns. Manchester, Winchester, Dorchester, Chester. Those were all started as Roman military outposts. My middle name, Wallace, means a stranger. Now, most people just take the ER off of that and move from there. But we all have a name, but we also have a name, a reputation, you know. The name means everything. You develop a reputation. If you were in some kind of business, what does reputation mean in business?
Everything.
Why is that?
Because you'll have people tell other people, and then word of mouth that you do good work and do good business, and
trust.
People come to you.
Trust? Yeah, it means everything. You know, and people now today will turn themselves inside out to get someone somewhere to put 5 stars, you know, on it. This is, speaking of a whoops, this happened. There have been some people who, have you ever gone someplace and you needed some help so you bought a travel guide? You know, we went to Europe with some friends, and we got some help from a very well-known guy. He's on public television and through his organization. But some people, you know, now turn to the internet and they go to, you know, I'm looking for a travel guide. And all these travel guides are now out there that are written by software. Not by someone who actually was there, but they cut and paste information and create these travel guides, you know. And there are no, and when people look at them, they have all of these reviews with 5 stars. Well, none of those stars came from a person. They came from a piece of software that logged in and said 5 stars. So the idea that you can trust the names of those things is really up for grabs. But names, reputations mean a lot. And there's a guy in the Bible. He's just a little known character. I'm not sure how many people know him. He only appears in this one chapter. He only appears in this one place. He sort of pops on the scene and then he's gone. Anybody ever hear of a guy named Nabal? Or Nabal? What do you know about him? Not a lot. Well, there's not a lot to know. I'm sorry? Had to do with David? And Nabal has a name, but he also has the name. Okay, he has a reputation. And neither of them were really all that great. You know, when we read about him, it says there was a man in Maon who had, he had property. So what does that mean? He's rich. Okay, he was not just rich, he was very wealthy. He had thousands of goats and 3,000 sheep. Okay, and shearing was, you know what shearing is, right? It's a haircut. Very good. I like that. It was a haircut on the animals. So he's got people working for him. He's a high roller. He's got money. He's got property. He's got, you know, the $120,000 Tesla that goes from 0 to 60 in under 2 seconds. You know, he's got it all, yes.
But did he know Jesus?
Well, let's take a look. And his name was Nabal, and what kind of guy was he?
Very wealthy.
He was surly?
Very wealthy.
He was very wealthy, but he was surly. And he was mean. Uh-oh. And he was a descendant of Caleb. So here we have this guy, and we hear all this good news about. It's like anybody... look on, so anybody reads, don't raise your hand. If you ever go and look on social media, what does everybody say about themselves and their lives?
That they're wonderful.
Yeah, oh, this is great. Here's all my fans, my peeps. You know, everybody loves me. Oh, I'm so happy. I've got it all wired. Well, this guy, thank you, that Nabal, he's got all of this money, he's got the reputation, but in his life, he has a name. His name means foolish and senseless. That's what his name means, and maybe that came out. He's surly. He's evil. He's evil, and he's mean. He's hard. He's severe. You don't think he knew Jesus? So, has anybody ever met a Nabal? You ever met anybody who was mean and surly?
Yes.
Yeah.
You do it all the time? Yeah. Okay. Maybe. Where do you find these people? In my family? Where else might you find these people?
Everywhere.
Yeah. I'm sorry?
Owners of businesses.
Yeah. They're all around. Did you ever ask yourself the question, because I'm sort of an odd thing, when I meet somebody like this, I want to ask the question of them, what happened? What made you this way? Who hurt you? Mm-hmm. Who hurt you? And we don't know anything about Nabal, about the how he got there, but we know where he's at. He's surly. He's mean. Is this the kind of guy you want dating your granddaughter? No. Is this the kind of guy you want to buy the house next to you?
No.
No. And yet, he seemed like he had life all together. And maybe you've asked yourself this question. Oh, God, are you there? Here's this person who's mean and surly. And yet they're wealthy. They've got all this stuff. Their business is booming. Why? Where are you, God? Hello? Are you asleep at the switch? Isn't it your job, God, that when people do bad things, that you stomp on them? Shouldn't they get the rewards now? Shouldn't you be crushing them now? Have you ever asked that question? Have you thought about the question? Lots. And in spite of this guy who's got this really bad name, and he's got a really bad reputation, he does have a bright light in his life. His wife, Abigail. He is surly and mean, and what is she? She's intelligent, and she's not a bad-looking lady. She's beautiful. And I always wonder, have you ever met people and you look at the wife, you look at the husband, and you go,
what happened here?
Yeah, what happened here? Or have you ever been in a wedding and they're going up and I want to lean over to Marianne and I'm sorry to say I have done this. I say, I give it 6 months. You know, my cousin was like that. I was like, no. But there are people, you just look at them and say, how did this happen? Was she on drugs when this happened, that she got, you know, hog-tied into this?
Probably an arranged marriage back then.
Yeah, would have been an arranged marriage. Don't you think she had a conversation or so with her father afterwards or before? I mean, I remember I went to Marianne's dad and mom and asked permission to ask Marianne to get married. And their response was so beautiful, so lovely, so well thought out. They said, well, do whatever you want. I was like, I'm going to take that as a yes. But here we have Nabal and Abigail. Talk about oil and water. And into their lives, David and his men sort of come in. There's a backstory where David and his men had come and they had watched over Nabal's sheep and goats and had protected his stuff. And now they're coming back and saying, you know what? It's like after the meal, right? You're at a restaurant, they come with the check, and there's that little line for the tip, right? The tip. We gave you good service. Is there a tip? And Nabal, who is foolish, surly, and mean, gives him a tip. What is his tip? He says, who is this David? Who is this son of Jesse? Many servants are breaking away from their masters these days. Why should I take my bread and water and the meat I have slaughtered for my shears and give it to the men coming from whom, who knows where? Now, that's not a tip. That's like somebody once said to me, you want a tip? Don't park in front of a fire hydrant. That's a tip. Yeah, but this is worse, you know, and we can get a little insight into Nabal if we look at these words. What's the most common word? I. You know, what I, my, it's my stuff, my bread, my water, my meat. Who's he talking about?
I forget the phrase you used, the Trinity.
The unholy Trinity. Me, myself, and I. And you were you going to say something?
Yeah, basically.
Okay. Thank you. You see, it's all consuming. Now, not all rich people are like that. You know, I have a friend who was looking forward to his career and said, if I get so much money, I'll be good. I'll have enough. And he reached that amount, and it was like, you know what? That's not enough. He then said, I want to have $1 million in the bank. I want to have $1 million. So they worked hard and they saved and their stock did well and they had $1 million. They had two commas, right? And in their statements, they got, and the first time they saw that, they said, wow, we have arrived. And that lasted for about 30 seconds. Because then they said, well, you know, that's not enough. How about two? If one's good, two will be all that much better. And it was never enough. And I wonder if Nabal had that kind of thinking, that no matter how many sheep he had, it was never going to be enough.
Not content.
I'm sorry?
Not content.
Not content, right. It's like he responded negatively to everything. It's like this scene from Kelly's Heroes. It's a great scene. This is a real highbrow movie, okay? You gotta be very intelligent to like this movie.
Oh, man, you guys are crazy. Look, when we was in a Bocaz country, we was assaulted by them tigers. You know what I mean by assaulted, huh? Well, I mean assaulted.
Why don't you knock it off with them negative waves? Why don't you dig how beautiful it is out here? Why don't you say something righteous and hopeful for a change?
Crap.
I think Nabal was like that. Why don't you say something righteous and hopeful for a change? And he says, no, he can't. He wasn't like that. So David's men get the message, right? It's not a good message. And they respond. They tell David, and they went back. And when they reported what had happened, David says, okay, each one of you do what? Sharpen your sword, strap on your sword. So they did. And David strapped on his as well. And about 400 men went out with him. Why are they doing this? Are they going to have a picnic? They're going to have a little talk. They are going out. The time for talking is over, okay? It's these famous words.
Around the world on HBO pay-per-view. Ladies and gentlemen, from Mandalay Bay, Las Vegas, let's get ready to rumble!
It's time to rumble. That's why David says, put your swords on. We're done talking. It's time to do some action. And we're going to do a beatdown on Nabal, and they got their swords. And so the story goes on that this is going on, but one of the servants told Abigail, remember her, that David's messengers came, and what did Nabal do? He hurled insults at them. He hurled insults at them. Not exactly the way to win friends and influence people. So Abigail does something. She says, you know, what's going to happen? Now, and it goes on to say, now think it over and see what you can do. This is the servant talking to Abigail. Why? Because disaster is hanging over our master and his whole house. He is such a wicked man that no one can talk to him. David's men are going to come, and they're going to put down a whooping on him, and that means everything that Nabal owns and all the people. That's coming for them. But Nabal, what kind of guy is Nabal? Is he the kind of guy you can sit down with and break bread with and have a conversation?
No, he's mean.
He's surly, and no one can talk to him. You ever met a person who just would refuse to listen? Yeah. Maybe part of their refusing to listen is that they're talking all the time. And they're talking, and you can't talk and listen at the same time. This idea of doing two things at the same time is a lie, okay? You can't.
Amen.
So you can't. And I'll point you to the studies. And so you can't do these two things at a time. And all he's doing is saying, you know, they're coming after the master and his household, which, by the way, means us. And they were innocent, right? Who was the one who spoke badly? Nabal. But who's going to get hurt? Nabal, but everybody under his umbrella. People like this, maybe you can't talk to because they can't hear.
You're it.
Quincy's.
Any Quincy's. You're it, Quincy's. No, any Quincy's, no Starcy's.
You can't do that.
Can't do.
Cannot. Stamped it.
Can't do. Double stamped it. No erases.
Cannot. Triple stamped it. No erases. Touch blue, make it true.
You can't triple stamp a double stamp. You can't triple stamp a double stamp, Lord. You can't triple stamp a double stamp. Lord. You
guys. Enough.
Now, Lloyd wasn't listening, was he? What was he doing? Had his fingers in his ears and going, la, 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 right? You can't hear. And that's maybe Nabal didn't have his fingers in his ears, but he wasn't willing to listen. And Abigail sees what's going to happen to her, her husband, her family, and everyone associated with them. So what does she do? You know, it could be, finally, and get out from underneath this guy. But she doesn't live like that. She says, she acted quickly. She took a couple hundred loaves of bread, some wine, sheep that had been cut up and roasted grain, cakes of raisins, pressed figs, loaded them on the donkeys, and said, go ahead. So she quickly puts together a big meal. She does what Nabal should have done. She does it. She gives it. You see, I'll follow you, but she didn't. She didn't tell Nabal. She didn't tell Nabal because, quite frankly, he's not going to listen. He was also drunk. So we have Abigail, who, how does she do it? She does it quickly. There's not a lot of time you didn't have to have a conversation. She didn't have to have a meeting of the staff. She said, we're going to do this and we're going to do it now. And so they send it off to David. Excuse me. You know, she really knew her husband and she had to act to save him and her and everyone else. So she gets there. The food is delivered and she falls at David's feet. And look at what she says. Pardon your servant. Who's taking the blame? She is. Abigail's taking the blame for Nabal. Pardon your servant, my lord, and let me speak to you. Hear what your servant has to say. Please pay no attention, my lord, to that wicked man, Nabal. He is just like his name. His name means fool, and folly goes with him. As for me, your servant, I did not see the men your lord had sent. She takes responsibility. She knows her husband, and she could have just said what? Well, what do you expect, right? But she doesn't. She covers for him and goes on and says, and now, my lord, as surely as the Lord God lives and as you live, since the Lord has kept you from bloodshed and from avenging yourself with your own hands, may your enemies and all who are intent on harming you, my Lord, be like Nabal. And let this gift which your servant has brought to my Lord be given to the men who follow you. Again, her words are words of kindness, her words of grace. She takes the responsibility on herself. Now, did she do it? Is she the one who turned those guys away and said all those things? No, but she takes it on herself. So, she goes on to say, when the Lord has fulfilled for my Lord every good thing he has promised, which is that he's going to be king, concerning him and his appointment, appointed him the ruler over Israel, my Lord will not have on his conscience, listen, the staggering burden of needless bloodshed, or having avenged himself. She's saying, David, when you become king, you're not going to have to look back. You're not going to have to look back. Don't you and I want friends like Abigail? Don't we need people like Abigail? Because don't we all look back? What did she say? The staggering burden. We all of us, have that staggering burden. What a great turn of a phrase. The staggering burden. And she stopped it. She was faithful to her husband. She was faithful to David. She was faithful to God. She prevented a great sin that could have, you know, weighed on him for years. I have a friend who goes to this church. And she took a trip recently. And she had a broken relationship with a family member. It's been there for a long, long time. And they talked it through. The burden, the staggering burden. And Abigail wanted to prevent that. David's response is that he says to Abigail, praise be to the, you know, he doesn't say, hey, you're a good knight, you're a good chick. No, praise be to the Lord, the God of Israel, who has sent you today to meet me. May you be blessed for your good judgment and for keeping me from bloodshed this day, from avenging myself with my own hands. You notice this twice, avenging with her own hands. Don't you like revenge? Doesn't it feel good? I mean, after all, they hurt me, right? So what, don't I need to do that back? No. God says, that Chris talked about believing in Jesus. That means I'm going to trust God to do certain things for me. Part of that is I had this giant debt of sin that I couldn't fix. And what did Jesus do? He died for that. Now, believing him and receiving his forgiveness, that's a good deal, right? But believing in him also says, I need to believe that he's going to take care of me. And part of that taking care is, I'm going to have enough food, enough water, enough money, and that God's going to protect my name, my reputation. I got to let God do that. I can't hide from that. We need someone who knows what they're doing. And that's exactly who God is. He knows. He's the beginning from the end. He knows. We look at the problems of life and we say, I have no idea. We need somebody to step in to solve the problem. It's just like this scene from the movie Goldfinger. We'll be right back.
What kept you?
You know, James Bond is, you know, this nuclear device is going off, and he's like, which wires do I pull? I can't stop the things turning. But somebody who knows what's going on, what do they do? They threw the switch. And that's who God is. God is the one who can throw the switch. We're there trying, pulling wires and all this on our own. But God says, let go. Let me take care of that. And I'm here to tell you, he does it. It may not be the way you were looking for it. It may not be in the, you know, I want it right now. You know, God, I've got this schedule. You know, I never wear a watch, but I don't know why I'm doing that. But anyway, I want it done by a certain time, right? Right. It's got to be done by whenever. God says, I got it in a better way. And that can happen with changing our lives, changing habits. None of us are beyond it. None of us are beyond it. I want to tell you that I'm personally deeply hurt that no one said anything to me about the fact that I didn't have Dunkin' Donut coffee with me.
I know.
Everybody noticed, but don't hit. No hitting. Well, I've had this one for a while. But I wanted to make a change. I didn't have my jacket. It's 110 out there. Yeah, I didn't do that either. You know, it's not too late. It is not too late. It was not too late for Nabal. He could have gone to God and said the exact same words that David said. I have sinned against you and people. Forgive me. It's not too late. And he is the one who can make us new. But Nabal was sleeping in the other room, and then in the morning when he had sobered up, Abigail told him everything that had happened. And Nabal, his heart failed. It became like stone, and about 10 days later, he died. There are deep consequences in life. We have a friend who has asked us for a favor, and we have graciously said no. And they said, and they started crying. Oh, isn't there forgiveness? I said, yes, there's forgiveness, but there are consequences. And we're sorry, but no. And you know what? God works even through consequences. He really does. Nabal is now dead. So what's the consequence? Abigail is now what? She's, what'd you say?
The boss.
The boss. I like that.
She
certainly is lifted from the burden, but she's also a widow. And in those days, whether we like it or not, widows had no rights. So everything was going to go to somebody else. But when David heard that Nabal was dead, he says, praise be to the Lord who upheld my cause against Nabal for treating me with contempt. He has kept his servant David from doing wrong. You see, consequences. David was protected from them. Nabal's wrongdoing came down on his own head. God protected David's reputation, his name, and brought glory to himself. But then Abigail doesn't sit around. She does the quickly thing again. She gets on a donkey and she goes to David. And she becomes one of his wives. She didn't need time to pack. She didn't need to get on on the phone to say which was the fastest route. She just got up and went. She was ready to go on a moment's notice. And Abigail is a beautiful picture. She reminds us of Jesus in so many different ways. She reminds us that Jesus saw wrong and didn't just sit there. He saw the wrong in our lives, and what did he do? He acted. He came. He died. He rose from the dead. He acted. And she gave for the benefit of many, right? What she did impacted a lot of people. Same thing with Jesus. Jesus' death on the cross was for all who would believe. It's a great picture. She personally traveled to save. Jesus, what's the old hymn say? He left his Father's throne above, so free, so infinite his grace, emptied himself of all but love and bled for Adam's helpless race. Tis mercy all immense and free, for, oh my God, it found out me. She got up and left. Jesus got up off the throne of heaven for you and for me. She acted and spoke for others. Jesus did that, dying on the cross. When he calls out to God, what did he say? My God, why have you forsaken me? Those are words that he said because he took your sin and my sin on himself. And then he was concerned for the reputation of the one offended. Jesus came, what did Chris say? Not to make bad people good, but to
make dead people alive.
That's what Jesus came to do. She saved the life of the servants and everyone else. And Jesus comes and says, those who believe in me will be saved, now and forever. She didn't commit the wrong, did she? She didn't do the wrong thing. Jesus was perfect in his life. And yet, what did they do to him? They crucified him. They spit at him. He took our punishment on himself, and she paid for others. She didn't pay for herself. She paid for everyone else. And isn't that what Jesus did on the cross? He died to pay for everyone who would believe. And he changes everything. It's like this scene after the greatest story ever told. Lazarus is brought back from the dead by Jesus, and people run to tell Jerusalem about it. Raised from the dead. Guy who had been crippled was now healthy. Guy who was blind can now see. I would suggest that we all have a story. A story of being dead. A story of being crippled. A story of being blind. And in Jesus Christ, we are made whole. If that's not something worth talking about to people, to sharing, then I don't know what is. That's a great story. Not that we're perfect. We still have problems, all of us. But the fact that he died for you and for me and was raised the dead for you and for me, that should energize us, excite us to say, you know what, God? You can change me. A little thing like coffee. You can change me. Change something in my life. You can give me opportunities, and I want to speak for you. And I might go, ah-ba-ba, ah-ba-ba, ah-ba-ba-ba. But get out the word Jesus. I was in front of Walmart the other day. And there's this guy. Now, I don't know about how you feel about these kinds of guys, okay? But he came, and I just saw him standing around. It's inside. I'm getting ready to check out. And he says, I'm sorry, could you help me? I need this. It was a light bulb for his car, for the light headlights, he says. And I don't have enough money. First thoughts are going through my mind. This is a scam, okay? Maybe it's because I'm from the Northeast. Maybe I'm twisted and, you know, I'm that way. And I was like, and I thought, Jesus died for me. So I reached in my wallet and I gave him $5. And I said, I give this to you because Jesus has been good to me. And so I need to be good to you. It only cost me a few bucks. I had a chance to talk with the guy. Now, did he really need the money? I'll never know. But guess what? That's not my problem. Now, there is a certain amount of discernment, okay? But in this particular case, I thought it could be legit. So I'm going to err on the side of being kind and gracious. Why? Because I'm such a nice guy. No. Because Jesus has died for me. He's been kind to me. And I need to share that. And I was able to not just give, but in words to say, God has been good. Jesus. I said, Jesus has been good to me, so I'm being good to you.
You were putting, giving him food for thought, so to speak.
And that's God's business.
Yep.
My job is to say the words and live the life. I'm not here to earn points, but I'm here. Somebody once said, I've got nothing to prove, only a life to live. I thought that's pretty good. Same with you. You haven't got anything to prove, a life to live. So let's go live that life. Let's go live that life. And I know there are some, you know, things we've done that might say, oh, I can't do that. Yes, you can. Have you been forgiven? The answer is in Jesus Christ, you have been forgiven. Totally, fully, all sin, all sin, all sin. We don't like to think about that. We like to think there are certain sins that are just so bad that are never going to be forgiven. There is no such thing.
The thing about that story is that God put you in the path of this man, and you spoke to him, like you said. But in a sense, God was speaking to you, too, by saying to be more giving, to let go, to be more loving like Jesus wants you to be.
Mm-hmm.
But he changed your mind and probably changed this other man's life and his mind too, in his way of thinking.
Well,
so see we don't always see that.
Mm-hmm.
But if you step back and take a moment to think about it, how God really mm-hmm. works, it's amazing. It's just mm-hmm. to me, I see it that way. That's it's amazing how he can turn people around.
Who knows? He might have wanted to go and get a bottle, you know, and just those words.
Perhaps.
And now it's actually between that man and God. Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You did mm-hmm. you serve the part that God wanted you to mm-hmm. do for him? Now it's between that man and God. Mm-hmm. So whatever that man decides to do is between him and God. Mm-hmm. It's no longer in your hands.
And so you see, God can use people like you and me. That's the ticket. Not special, just ordinary. Because there's nobody special in here except the one who died for us. Let's pray to him. Our Father and our God, I thank you that you love us with an unending love, a love that brought you here to this crummy earth that you made perfect, and we have screwed it up. Not just the planet, but our relationship with you and each other. And you died a death that we deserved. You paid a price we deserve. And so we are thankful, thankful, thankful. Forgive us for not releasing our rights to you and allowing you to move in our life. Change us this week, O God. Open our hearts to you. In Jesus' name, amen.